We're about to embark on a new melacha, and for our purposes, this is going to be the last of the melachas for this series, even though the truth is it's really only the 38th melacha. The 39th melacha is carrying, but it's kind of hard to treat carrying as one of the regular lamites melachas. Just if you think about it in terms of dafim in the Gemara, there are 157 dafim in Masechet Shabbos, of which many of them actually deal with carrying also, and there are 105 dafim in Erevin. Carrying, no pun intended, carries with it a significant weight of the Shabbos. It was definitely an understatement, so maybe we'll have to wait for another time, another place for that. But for our purposes, so we're getting to, we're finishing the Shurim from Motzei Shabbos, it's finishing the Melachas. We have other things to talk about afterwards. But in terms of the Melachas proper, so the 38th Melacha for us is going to be the Melacha Makba Tatish. We'll try to spend a little bit of time analyzing this Melacha, both on the level of the Rais, as well as some of the Dinim Derabbanan that accompany this Melacha. The Melacha Machmeh Patish is a little bit of a misnomer because it has very, very little to do with hitting and very, very, almost nothing to do with hammers. It is only called Machmeh Patish almost as an example. It's really different from all the other Melachas just in terms of its naming. Machmeh Patish is an example of doing this Melacha, to hit with a hammer, in the sense of the real Melacha is what's called Gemar Melacha. The real Melacha is to put the final touches on something. That's the Melacha Machmeh Patish. That's why sometimes we use the terms misakin kli or misakin manam. I'm going to be a mate word for kli. That's the fixing, putting the final touches on something. That's the real malacha. Sometimes that is done with a hammer blow, so therefore we call it machmeh patish. But again, it can easily be violated without any connection to hammers whatsoever, any hitting of any shape or form. So the malacha machmeh patish is, of course, one of the 39 malachos. But it is somewhat of a difficult malacha to pin down because it's kind of hard to answer the question directly. Is this called the end of the malacha? Not called the end of the malacha. Is this called the final touch? Not called the final touches. So there is a Gemara that appears in Perek Habona, the beginning of the 12th Perek Masechta Shabbos, which shed some light on Machmeh Patish by not talking about Machmeh Patish. The Gemara shed a little bit more light on Machmeh Patish in the following sense. It's a Gemara that we spoke about in the past. The Gemara talks about a person who constructs a shovel on Shabbos. Constructing a shovel basically means there are two parts of a shovel. There's the wooden part, and the blade part, the metal part. So you take the piece of wood, take the blade, and you connect them together. You put in a peg or something, connect them together. So there's no question that you shouldn't be doing that on Shabbos. The only question the Gemara is that which malacha precisely is violated. The Gemara presents two different opinions in the beginning of Perek HaBone. One view is that this is a violation of bone, it's called building. The other view is that this is a violation of Machmeh Patish. And it's not clear in the Gemara what the issue is exactly. Why should one say that it is bone, it's not bone, or why is it Machmeh Patish, not Machmeh Patish? Very, very unclear. So the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, which malacha does it fall under? And it's not clear exactly what the point of contention is. So there is a question that has to be raised before we can understand whether it should or should not be Machmeh Patish. There's a little bit of a throwback to a bonus, something that we spoke about several weeks ago. We have to understand first in order to understand what the Machmeh Patish part of the sugya is. So when it came to Bona, we were very startled. The Rishonim were very startled by why the Gemara even discusses Bona altogether in this context. Don't we have a rule called Ein Binyan B'Kalim? Don't we know that the Binyan, Bona, doesn't really speak to Kalim? Bona is a malacha that's associated with structures, with buildings, that build a house, so fix the door, things that are connected to the ground. That's the malacha of Bona. Whereas Kalim usually don't lend themselves to malachas Bona altogether. So it's a little bit strange. There should be one opinion that says, Rabba Mechayim Mishim Bona. So if you remember back several weeks ago, we spoke about this, and there were different opinions in Rishonim. There were some Rishonim who said that this is worse than just regular bone. This is called asiyas hakli. This is called, I'm literally making a kli. I'm making a kli from scratch. So maybe that would be subject to the melacha of bone. The other Rishonim who said that ain binyan b'kalim only applies when it's not such a serious kind of a binyan, when it's pieces that are almost like broken apart altogether, but if it's a more serious kind of a binyan, there would be binyan on Kalim. So there are an array of different opinions as to what the Gemara meant, what Rav meant at least with that statement, the Yechai Mishum Bona. But there is a fascinating interpretation given by one of the Rishonim, by Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam, Sefer Yoreim. that is quoted in the Hagos Mordechai. In the back of every Gemara, there's always the Mordechai, the notes of the Mordechai, and then there are the Hagos Mordechai, very often that things that were kind of left out and other things that were added in, whatever it was. So in the back of the Gemara, first you find the Mordechai, and then you find the Hagos Mordechai. So the way back in the of Masechta Shabbos, so you'll find the Hagos Mordechai, the quotes in the name of the Sefer Reim, or Lezner Mitz, the following, Chiddush Gadol in this Gemara. Well, Lezner Mitz says that when the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Mishum Bona, Rav doesn't mean that you're Chayiv Mishum Bona. You're actually not Chayiv Mishum Bona. When he said Mishum Bona, that building a shovel is part of Bona, what he meant is that because it's quasi Bona, I didn't say Chayiv Bona because it's a clay, because it's in the ballpark of Bona, therefore it's not Machbe Patish. What Rav meant to say was that because something is bona, that prevents it from being makbe patish. What in the world does that mean? So Sefer Reim explains that makbe patish is a very, very specific connotation halacha. It means the final touches, not the entire job. Makbe patish means the item is basically made already. I built it already last week. It was built in the factory. It's basically done, but it's not quite finished. And when I put on the final touches, the finishing touches on this job, that's Malachis Machme Patish. Anything, when I build the entire item, B'chila V'Atzof, that's not Machme Patish. What is it? Maybe it's bonus, maybe it's not bonus. You got to learn this because it's a bonus. So since the Halach is Ein Binyan B'Kalim, says the Sefer Reim, we pass it Ein Binyan B'Kalim, and the Sefer Reim's opinion was, even though it's a Asiyas HaKli, it doesn't matter, Ein Binyan B'Kalim, finished, end of discussion. Since Ein Binyan B'Kalim was an absolute statement, so once we declare that this should have been bona, because this has all the trappings, all the makings of bona, because I'm doing the entire thing. Since this should have been bona, that theoretical connection to bona is a maskia for Machme Patish. It's a point for Machme Patish. It excludes you from Machme Patish. Machme Patish and bona are cannot be coexistent, says the Sefer Reim. They're contradictions to one another. Bona is when you build something legamre. Machme Patish is when you put on the final touches. So decide which malacha we're talking about. It can't be bona because ein binyan b'kelim, and memela, since it should have been bona, it has all the makings of bona except the fact that it's a kli, it can't be machbe patish. That's quite a chiddush from the Sefer Reim. Many of the Rishonim do not say this at all. There's actually a Tosus in Masechet Shabbos that clearly doesn't agree to this. Tosus discusses the Gemara has a statement about if a person makes a blows glass, you blow it, again, check with the glass makers. So when you're preparing this glass, you're making this glass clay. So the Gemara says in Shabbos, Chai Meshumach Bepatish. So Tosus has a kasha. Tosus says, wait a second, why are you only Chai Meshumach Bepatish? You Chai Meshumbona also, because if the Tosus sheet is that Osa Kli is Chai Meshumbona, so Tosus says, So you should be chai for both. So according to the Sefer Reim, you would never say such a thing. According to the Sefer Reim, once you're chai for one, so then you can't be chai for the other. They're opposites of one, not little opposites. They're different from one another. So Tosfos has the understanding you can be chai for both. You can be chai for both. It's not a steer, it's not a contradiction in terms. But I call upon this Chiddush Gadol of the Sefer Reim that a recipe for not being chai for Machme Patish is Dafka being chai for Bona is really a tremendous chiddush. And again, not all the Rishonim agree to this. So that's one nekuda, one issue that comes up in terms of defining Machme Patish. It's almost like a backwards definition. First, we have to define what's not Machme Patish before we can define what is Machme Patish. So according to the Sefer Reim, being chai for Bona is a mafki, is a pointer for Machme Patish and other Rishonim. There's a Rashi that has also a tremendous chiddush about Machme Patish. And again, also works backwards. Something that's a mafki of Machme Patish, something that prevents you from violating Machme Patish. The Rashi appears in the seventh paragraph of Shabbos, where the Gemara is talking about a person makes a barrel on Shabbos. And the Gemara lists off all the different malachas you could be chayav from first preparing the dirt and crushing up the dirt and then kneading it into something to spin on the potter's wheel, all the malachas of making a barrel. So the whole list, the Gemara talks about throwing it into the fire and the barrel hardens, etc. So Rashi fracked the kasha. How come Machme Patish not on the list? So here I fixed the barrel. I mamish made final touches on the barrel. So the truth is that the Sefer Reim wouldn't have asked that kasha. According to the Sefer Reim, once you chay mishubona, it can be chay mishumachmat patish. But Rashi asked that question. Rashi says, so how come you're not chay mishumachmat patish for building the barrel? So Rashi gives you a new club, a new limitation, new hesitation when it comes to melachas machmat patish. Rashi writes that in order to be oiva machmat patish, you have to do it actively. Here, it happens by itself. I throw this barrel into the furnace, whatever it is, going to harden. The hardening of the barrel happens on its own. Something that happens by its own is Nishmalach and Machmat Batish. That's just the way it is. That I put it into, it didn't happen totally on its own. It's not Grama, but I set it up. But Lamaise, I set into motion a process that happens by itself. As Rashi, that cannot be Machmat Batish. Machmat Batish requires to be done with an act of, not literally with a bang with a hammer, but an act of, you know, some kind of an action similar to Makka B'Patish, literally Pshutik Mashmo, as a Maisa B'Yadai. This is also a big, big question, also a very startling Rashi, that other Rishonim don't necessarily accept. There's a Rosh, Mr. Beit, that doesn't say this. It says that you can have Makka B'Patish, even if it's something that's Mamela. So the truth is that it's really a difficult concept that Rashi is being mechadish just because where does it come from? So how did Chazal figure this out according to Rashi that if the Mlach happens by itself, so it can't be Machmat Patish? Now we know that that does not apply to other Malachas for sure. There are other Malachas that can occur even if they happen by themselves as long as you started the ball rolling. So let's say, for example, Bishul. So Bishul, I take a pot of water. I fill it up, I put it on the fire. The water doesn't get cooked up in an instant. It takes a little while for the water to cook. So you don't say, oh, well, it's happening. Mameil, I'm not chayev. Well, let's say, for example, if I plant a seed. So some of you may remember back to when we spoke about Zerea about 3 years ago already. So we won't hold anybody responsible for that one. It was the first malacha. When you plant a seed, so there was a big machlekes acharonim. At what point are you chayev? Are you chayev just once you throw it into the ground? And even if somebody pulls the seed out, you're still chayev because you did an act of Zerea? Or do I say, no, I'm only chayev once the seed takes root. So in a week from now, I'll have to figure out, was I chayev retroactively to the time that I put it into the ground? That's a shayla. According to many achronim, you're only chayev even when the seed actually takes root. That's a delay action. How am I chayev for that? And the answer is you are chayev for those kinds of malachas. And nowhere does it say in halacha that you're only chayev for malacha if you do it b'yadayim. We spoke previously about Malachas Kiboy. Gemara says if you do an act of Kiboy Derech Grama, you're going to be potter. That's true by other Malachas as well. But there, that's very different. There, I didn't even do the act the Adayim. Let's say if you remember the case of Kiboy from a few weeks ago, there's a fire raging and I take a barrel, I fill it up with water and I put it in front of the fire. That's not an act of Kiboy. That's a nothing. Eventually, the fire is going to rage through and bust the barrel and make the water come out. That's already 10 steps in between. So other actions, other things are happening. There are time delays. That's not keeping me a dime. So when I take a fire extinguisher, I put out a fire, I take a barrel of water and pour it onto the fire, that's keeping me a dime. When I set up a barrel 20 feet away from the fire that's going to eventually put out the fire, that's called kibbutz derech grama. But over here, this is not grama. Putting a pot of water on the fire is not grama. Putting a seed in the ground is not grama. No, that's the Yadayim Amish. It's just that these kinds of malachas have a little bit of a time delay to them. So clearly the halacha recognizes that you can have a violation of malacha deraisa with a time delay. But when it comes to Machmat Patish, somehow that's different. So maya, like manishtan, how do you know which is which? So the Minchas Chinuch tells us that the answer, obviously, according to Rashi, is the old story. It all goes back to Mishkan. Everything revolves around the Mishkan. We're going to go back to the basics and see, well, how was this particular malacha practiced in the Mishkan? So we know when they cooked in the Mishkan, things didn't cook up instantaneously. So they were cooking up the herbs to extract the dyes from the herb. That was like regular cooking, so it took a little bit of time until the item cooked up, boiled up. So that's okay. Well, let's say what they planted for the Mishkan, so there was time delays. That's okay. That was where the Mishkan things were done. But the Machmat Patish of the Mishkan was not that way. The Machmat Patish was probably with a hammer and banging. They're fixing up the gold, fixing up the silver, banging up the rough edges on different things. So that is Machmat Patish. Says the Chas Chinuch, says the Tzura Samalocha and the Mishkan was the Adayim literally, not happening with Mela. That's why Rashi says that the Halacha dictates that Halacha insists that there has to be an mamish ma'aseh yadayim in order to become makbel ba'amish. And the Rosh didn't accept that. The Rosh thought it wasn't true. The Rosh argued with that. So a kopar you have machlekes mishanim. Bottom line, machlekes mishanim. What the status of makbel ba'amish is if it's done in this, I wouldn't say roundabout way, but in a little bit of a time delay. It is this sheet of Rashi that there's a difference between Makom Patish and Bishul that can become very, very helpful in terms of understanding a whole array of issues, which really go back to some of the things we spoke about almost years ago, back in Bishul, and now come back to life again in Makom Patish. There is a big machlekes acharonim about, does the Malacha Makom Patish lend itself generally about Tikkun Kli, Masat Man, about Kalim? Does it make sense to even talk about this malacha in the realm of food? So this was a big machlekes acharonim. So there were some acharonim, the Lavush and others who had this idea that it is possible to speak about makom patish on food. And if you take something that was totally, completely inedible and you make it edible, even if you didn't do it through bishul, it was definitely missing a bishul component, just the mere fact you took something that was completely worthless and made it usable, even if it's not a shana bishul, may still be a violation of makom patish. Some achronim who have such an idea. So one of the discussions about this is, what if I take a food that's very, very salty, impossible to eat the way it is, and I wash it off? Not with hot water, I didn't cook it, cold water. The question is, could that be a malacha? Some achronim will say, maybe yes. Some achronim claim that would perhaps be a malacha. Where did this idea come from? Why did some achronim even come up with this concept that's called a malacha? So there is a sugya that we actually spoke about this in the Wednesday night shiur about the chocolate bombs a couple of days ago. So there is a sugya in the end of Masechet Shabbos about Kali Abishal. The Mishnah tells us in the 22nd paragraph of Shabbos, Perek Chavis, that if you take an item that's regular kind of a food, and you put it into a cliche, you put it into a bowl of hot water, it's already been once removed from the kli that it was cooked up in. So generally speaking, klisheni edim avasha. However, the Mishnah says, if it's kali adishal, if it's something very, very easily cooked, so then it can potentially become cooked even in a klisheni. And the Gemara uses the phrase, hadachosan zui gemar malachton. The phrase Chazal used, gemar malacha. And the simple meaning of the Gemara is that's the mamash din deraisa. If you take this kind of a food that normally most foods put into a klisheni taka would not halachically cook, but the Kali Abishal, the very, very light kinds of foods would. We spoke about it on Wednesday night. We have a Chumra also to talk about the Lazmi Mitz that we're not sure which foods are Kali Abishal, which are not. So therefore, everything is treated for us. The Chumra is Kali Abishal. That's part of the reason why we have a practice not to put raw foods in a cliche. But so the Gemara uses the phrase, Hadachosan Zui Gemar Malachtan. Washing the foods is like finishing the job on them. So there was a big machlekes. What does that mean? So some Acharonim claim what that means is the term Gemar Malacha usually conjures up the image of the Malacha Makom Patish. So some Acharonim said, well, it must be Makom Patish. That's it. That's the Malacha that we're talking about. It must be that there's Makom Patish on foods. And other Acharonim say, no, Mishnah Brura is very, very strong against this whole Mishnah Brura. Thought this whole was not correct. He thought there's no such thing as Makom Patish on Ochlin. He says, every time the Gemara uses the phrase, Gemar Malachtan, it's just a code for Bishul in that. So you just mean it's Bishul, but it's not really Makom Patish. I'm sorry, someone had a question.
So we'll have a problem whenever we put spices, especially that create heat.
That's exactly what we're talking about, right? That's exactly what we're leading into. So this is almost like a continuation of Wednesday night shiur. So we're crossing the path between the two. So again, there are some Acharonim, including the Mishnah Berurah, who say, L'hoyut Ramayalam, it never was, never is, never will be. There's no such din of Makom Patish on food. Makom Patish was said on Kalim and finished Gemara, end of discussion. And other Acharonim weren't so sure that that's true. Other Acharonim said there may be a concept of a Makom Patish on food. So now the very serious question you have to ask is that if it's true that there is Makom Patish on food, then we have to ask ourselves, which is really, I think, the question that's being presented here is, wait a second, we have a whole bunch of kulas and uchas bishuls. We know, the Mishnah says, you're basically allowed to cook with klisheni, especially as you mentioned correctly, tavlin, spices. The Mishnah says black and white, you're allowed to put spice into klisheni. There are a lot of things allowed to be cooked. I mean, we're stuck today because we're not sure what kind of bishul are or not, so we have a custom to refrain from everything in a klisheni. But even the Gemara, everything is really mutter in a klisheni, unless you know that it's kali bishul. So come the Acharonim and say, how could there ever be a din of cooking a cliche? How could it ever be mutter? Forget about Vishal, let's call it makwabatish. Why don't you say you're in violation of the Yisra makwabatish? So turn every Vishal that slips between the cracks. There's some quirk, it's not Vishal, call it makwabatish. You're taking something that's inedible and making it edible. So ain't lucha makwabatish, go abu. So again, the Mishnah Berurah would not even be thinking about this kasha. But the other Acharonim who did accept this chumra would be bothered with this kasha. So Mechaz Chinuch explains that the answer is based on Rashi. Rashi said that makwa batish by definition cannot be violated when there's a little bit of a delay. Anytime it takes, I don't know what that number of delay is, a couple of seconds, a couple of minutes, anytime it doesn't happen, be adayim, if it's not makwa batish, literally like banging with a hammer blows, the motion, it takes a while for it to happen. This is Mishkan makwa. Don't ask any kashas, that's not similar to the Mishkan's model, that's not chaim shem makwa batish. If that's the case, so then Mechaz Chinuch says, I understand full well why the only time we ever find Makam Epatish by Ochlin is by Kali Abishol, because not only are they easily cooked in terms of a cliche versus a klivishon, they're easily cooked in terms of time frame as well. They cook immediately. It means the second you pour the boiling water on this, it's finished. Tomorrow, they're good to go. They're like a tea bag. We spoke about it Wednesday night, according to many posts, and tea bags like Kali Abishal against Reb Chaim with Mishnah Berurah Shita. So if we think about it, when you pour water onto the tea bag, it doesn't take an hour and a half to make a cup of tea. It's not like cooking egg, like cooking a piece of chicken, like cooking a piece of meat. It happens in a second. The tea bag, I guess those who like the tea better, maybe you know, it sits for longer, it gets richer, you know, but tachlis, you can make yourself a cup of tea fairly quickly. So comes the Mechaz Chinuch and says, the only time we ever find that there's a discussion of makwa patish by Ochlin, but only those kinds of Ochlin that get completed, that get done, that get, you know, nigma malachban immediately. The minute that it's going to take something, it's going to take longer. You can't ask a kasha, if I take a raw egg and throw it into a klisheni, don't call it bishul, call it makwa patish. No, it can't be makwa patish. Makwa patish, by definition, cannot be a delayed action. Bishul can't, makwa patish can't. So Akopanim, we've been almost like defining Makom HaPatish by what it's not. Like our starting point is, well, any and every time I take something that's not complete and I complete it for use, so this is Makom HaPatish. And now we're taking a step back and saying, not so simple, not so fast. First you have to decide, according to the Sefer Reim, is it Bona? And if it's Bona, or even if it's not literally Bona, it's subject to Bona, it should have been Bona, could have been Bona, would have been Bona, that's not Makom HaPatish. So being part of Bona is a mafkiya of Makom HaPatish. Now, according to Rashi, we have another mafkiya of Makom HaPatish. Not everything is Makom HaPatish, because if it's done through a time delay, then by definition, it can't be Makom HaPatish. So I started off the shiur by saying Makom HaPatish is a high malach to define. We haven't been able to come up with it with a good positive definition. We're almost defining it almost by what it's not. There is a very questionable Rambam in describing Makom HaPatish as well. The Gemara speaks about a mafis morsa on Shabbos. A person has like a pimple or something, it's full of pus. He wants to let the pus out. So the Gemara says, sometimes that's mutter and sometimes that's also on Shabbos, depending on what his intent is. So if his intent is only lahoti licha, literally just wants to get it out, he couldn't care what it looks like afterwards, he just wants to empty out the pus. So the Gemara says that cannot possibly be a raisa. At worst, that would be some kind of a chashash to Rabbanan, and then assuming that the person is very uncomfortable, so it's in pain, whatever it is, so then Chazal would lift it, that is the Rabbanan b'makom tzar. That's the simple reading of the Gemara. But every once in a while, the Gemara says the opening up of a wound, or opening up of the pus, could potentially be a malacha d'arayis. What is that? If it's osakach lasos lapeh, if he does it in such a way, he makes like a nice opening in such a way that it creates literally an opening, a pesach. So an asiyas a pesach in something is always a red flag in halacha. And when you open up cans, we spoke about this, there's a potential problem. Anytime you make a pesach, this is a pesach yofa, a nice, fine looking opening, you're asking for trouble on Shabbos. So when it comes to opening up, making a pesach on your body, so could that be a malacha? What malacha is that? The Gemara sounds like it's a malacha deraisa. The Gemara says, "Imlasos lapech chayav." So, which malacha deraisa is that? That's a big machlekes rishonim. So, the Rambam writes, "It's maleches makya bepatish." That's the lashon of the Rambam. That's Malachas Makor Patish. So then when the Rambam describes why is it Malachas Makor Patish, Rambam gives you somewhat of a startling reason. The Rambam writes, you know why it's called Malachas Makor Patish? Because Shezo Malachas HaRofei. This is what the doctors do. The Rambam definitely had an in as to what the doctors do. That was his job. Besides being the Rambam, he was also the doctor. So the Rambam writes, that's what we do. That's what you take in the medical book. I don't think the medical books were that long to read, but we're on page 22. That's what you do for a wound. You make a Sesed Pesach. This is Derech HaRofim, and this is Malachas Makor Patish. So many of the Rishonim are taken aback when the Rambam said that. The Raivan on the spot says, what kind of Makor Patish is that? He says, you want to call it Bona that I got. Why is it Bona? Because you're building. Like the Gemara says, let's say I have a house, and I knock a hole into the wall of the house to hang a picture. So I made a hole for some productive thing. So I'm improving the quality of the structure. So that's called Malachas Bona. What does that have to do with the person? So the Gemara asked that question. We spoke about this way, way back. The Gemara says that some of the malachas that we wouldn't have expected to apply to people do apply to people. And one of them is potentially the malacha of bona, building. Why is that? Why does bona apply to people? The Gemara quotes a pasuk in Parshas Bereishis, that even Hashem Elokim is a tela, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the side, the rib, whatever you want to call, whatever it was, that the tail, whatever the pshat in the side of a Rishon was, and he built the intachava. So the Gemara uses a lashon vayiven. So the Gemara has a whole list of different meanings of that word vayiven. Is a very, very tricky word. So the Gemara has actually a whole series of different halachic conclusions we can draw from the fact that chava is described as being vayiven, as lashon binyan. So one interpretation the Gemara says is a lashon, not so much bina, lashon bina, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave extra bina, extra understanding. Women have a greater intelligence than men, and the Gemara says as a din, that's the reason why women become bas mitzvah at the age of 12 instead of the age of 13 like boys. The Gemara is clear, Maseches Nida, that there are really two different components of becoming bar bas mitzvah. There's a physical maturity and there's an emotional maturity. That's why many Rishonim, why there are actually two different shiurim to become bar mitzvah. Person becomes a mitzvah when he's 13 and he develops beis saros, when he develops two hairs in that area that are associated with the sign of physical maturity. Or a girl becomes bas mitzvah when she turns 12 years old and she develops beis saros. So what do you need both for? What do you need physical maturity and years? So there are different opinions about this. There's one opinion we shared that says that you really only need the physical sign. The beis saros is the real simon. The only problem is that in theory, a little kid can also, because somebody's having a hormonal imbalance or something, and a very young child could also start to develop hairs. So we don't really know that it's a sign of godless until they've reached a certain age. So the role of age is not really objectively part of becoming a mitzvah. The age is just there to prove that the simanim are accurate. And other Rishonim say no. Other Rishonim say that the two different halachas, you become bar bas mitzvah with two different things happening. You have to have physical maturity and you have to have emotional, some degree of emotional growing up, some maturity in that sense of the word, and that's what you need years for. So it's really two different factors. So it'll be an interesting nafkamina ladina. Nafkamina ladina will be, the Gemara says in Yevamos that banim arem kesimanim, that having a child is the same or even better proof of physical maturity than developing hairs. Today, Cyrus. So that's a sign that your body is working properly. You could theoretically have a child. First, the girl mamash gave birth. She had a baby. So then the Gemara says, in the chasim and mizeh. So there's the machlekes and rishonim. What if you have a girl who's under the age of 12? She's 10 years old and she had a baby. Is she automatically gadola now? The some rishonim say, no, she's not a gadola yet because she's still missing that maturity. I mean, she may have physical maturity already, biological maturity, but she doesn't have the intellectual maturity. And therefore, until she's 12 years old, she can't become bas mitzvah no matter what. Another Rishonim say no. Other Rishonim say that there is no halachic independent din you need to be 12 years old. The din is you need to be 12 to prove that the saros are real. You don't need to be 12 to prove the baby's crying, the baby's real. The baby came out, she was pregnant, she gave birth to a baby, the baby's real. The baby's not a fake. So according to some Rishonim, you can become, a girl can become bas mitzvah before 12, a boy can become bar mitzvah before 13. According to some Rishonim, the boy fathered a child before 13, so then he could theoretically become bar mitzvah before 13 as well. But getting back to the story, so according to many Rishonim, you need that emotional, intellectual maturity. The Gemara says, so why is it that a girl becomes bas mitzvah for a boy? I understand if everything is a function of physical maturity, so I understand. From my sense, when Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the girls do begin to physically mature. They begin to show their signs of puberty a little bit before boys generally. So I understand. But if there's an emotional side of this, intellectual side of this, maturity side of this, so why is it that the girl becomes before the boys? And the Gemara says, Malamish and also Kadosh Baruch Hu bini yaseira be'ish, that the girl has a bini yaseira, the girl. The Hiya Chazal are interpreting that to mean that she gets a jump start on intellectual maturity. Anyone who's ever taught elementary school will probably be able to attest to that trying to control a bunch of 12-year-old boys is not always the easiest job, and generally the 12-year-old girl is a little bit easier. It's not necessarily Raya Brewer, because it may be true before and after Bar Mitzvah also, so I don't want to say anything. I see some nods on some smiles here. So we'll leave it at that. But Akopan, the Gemara has a drasha of bini yaseir, some other words and other meanings. And one of the interpretations the Gemara says, the lashon binyan mamish, like a building, like a structure, that api avocha, a person is considered like a binyan, and the Gemara says, chapsen afkiminu chashavas, that the malacha bona could apply to people as well. So that's what the Ravid says on the Ram. The Ravid says, the reason why yechaya, for making a hole, it's like making a picture frame. It's like nailing in a picture. The same way if you make a hole in your wall in your house, so that's called malachas bayna, because you're improving a structure. So too, if you do a binyan on a person by making a hole, you're improving the structure. The Gemara says the Moshe, if you braid hair, so the Gemara says that braiding hair could potentially be part of malachas bayna, even though it's not a person, because it is shaykh of malachas bayna on a person. So too over here, when it comes to making this hole for medical purposes. So the Rishonim ask the Kash against the Rambam. I understand. You want to tell me it's Malachas Bain, I understand. You want to tell me it's Malachas Machma Patish. What's the Gemara Dover exactly? The person, basically okay. It's like, would you say a person's walking around, he's not a finished product. You become a finished product when you open up the hole to let the pus out. Doesn't sit right. Doesn't sound right. That's not really Machma Patish. So how can the Rambam call it Machma Patish? And the reason that the Rambam gives for this is because Zui Malachas Arofim. So we're not arguing the Rambam's medical assessment here, but we don't understand what this has to do with Machma Patish, and we definitely don't understand the Rambam's reasoning that because it's Malachas Arofim, that's what makes it Machma Patish. So there seems to be another mystery going on here behind the scenes of Machma Patish. So we start off the shiur by saying Machma Patish is a very, very hard malacha to pin down. We started by defining what it's not. That it's according to some Rishonim, it's not Boina. We started by defining what's not, according to Rashi, it doesn't exist when it happens by itself. And now, the only Rishon that we have was giving us a real example of Machmer Patish. We don't really understand why it is. We're not sure what is it about Malachas Rofim, Derech Rofim, that makes it Machmer Patish. So we have more questions at the end of the show than answers. Hopefully it's from next week, we'll try to use this Rambam a little bit as a potential Pesach, as a whole, but as a Pesach, to try to see what is it about Machmer Patish, and how could this carry over to some other potential ramifications of Machmer Patish. Next week, we'll continue. Have a good bye.